Hello again, Trippers. Alex Zane here, film journalist, movie fan, and your host for A Trip to the Movies. Thank you for joining me today. I'm currently in our podcast studio a mile beneath the streets of London, and in a moment, my guest this week, Ricky Whittle, takes us all on his perfect trip to the movies. Thank you for downloading the podcast. This episode is brought to you by Odeon. Because if you're going to watch a movie, it has to be at an Odeon Lux. For me, there's no better place to experience the mesmerizing magic of the big screen. And when I say big, I mean crystal clear, four times sharper, larger than life, I sense big. A place where you can recline in luxury whilst sipping on your favorite tipple as you immerse yourself in the all-consuming power of the story, enriched by epic Dolby Atmos that'll make your spine tingle and the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. Now that is how to experience a movie, and there's no better feeling. You can book your Odeon Lux experience at odeon.co.uk or via the My Odeon app. Odeon say, we make movies better, and they're not wrong. Also, if you'd like to watch today's interview in glorious Technicolor, do head over to our Trip to the Movies YouTube channel, where the video goes up a few days after the pod. And for all the latest updates, or to get in touch with us, you'll find us at Trip to Movies Pod on all social media. Right then, if you're ready, let's do this. Hello and welcome to the show where each week a special guest takes us on their perfect trip to the movies. This week we are joined by an actor who began his small screen career on that staple of British TV, Hollyoaks, before making the leap to America as the lead in the brilliant adaptation of Neil Gaiman's American Gods, playing the iconic Shadow Moon. Now he's back with the gripping war thriller Land of Bad, starring alongside Russell Crowe as a Delta Force sergeant trapped behind enemy lines. Here to tell us about that film and take us on his perfect trip to the movies is the brilliant Ricky Whittle. Ricky, it's so good to see you. How are you, my friend?
I am wonderful. I'm literally sat here looking at the beautiful sun outside my balcony in LA. Sun is shining. I have your beautiful face on camera. I've just come back from Monaco in France, so I had my little fix of Europe, my bread, my cheeses. I feel fat, but I'm loving it.
I think that might be one of the best answers to the question, how are you, I've ever heard.
There's nothing else I really need. Like, literally, I've had a big kind of face stuffing in Europe, so I feel like I'm very satisfied. I've had my cheat week. It's a good life, bro. It's a good life.
So LA, LA is very much home for you now. Do you get back here often? Do you still come back to these grey and right now absolutely rain soaked shores?
It's quite sad, but I really don't get back other than like when I have press in the UK, and that's usually to London. And all my family's up north, majority of it anyway. So I usually end up either coming before, but usually staying longer afterwards and just heading up north to see the family. Every now and then I pop in, but I think it's more fun if they come to me. You know, they get a holiday, they get the sun. I fly my mum out every February for her birthday. She enjoys some quiet time away from the grandkids. My sister comes out with all my nieces and nephews. They're just jumping around the pool, take them to the beach, to Universal, Disney. You know, it's more of a thing. You know, when I come back to England, it's more for that Sunday roast and the Greggs and a good curry. I'm a proper Northern boy.
Hey, I mean, look, you and me both, I'm from Leeds. And so, I mean, we could have a long, protracted argument about where the best curry in this country comes from.
Oof. I'm from Manchester, but I'm not going to complain about Leeds curry. Leeds, Bradford, like St. Helens, anywhere, man. Compared to the US, you know when they say, what do you miss from home?
Yep.
Good curry. Like Yorkshire puddings.
So on the press front, hey, I want to talk to you about Land of Bad.
We did a thing. We should probably talk about that, yeah?
I mean, I love the wormhole of great British delicacies. But yeah, let's talk Land of Bad. So I really enjoyed this movie. It's a cracking war movie. For anyone who hasn't seen it, it's got overtones of a little bit of Black Hawk Down, a little bit of Lone Survivor. Were there movies that you went out and watched before you did this movie as a kind of like, is that something you do as a prep?
Usually, yeah, you do all the stuff. You research kind of your director, your cast members, the story. If it's realistic, then you look into the history and try and find stories, you know, on the internet. You take dives down in training, you know, if that's needed. You go to the gym, you lose weight, you gain weight. You have all these kind of things that you can prepare for, but I had none of that because I literally had 2 days. I got the script on the Friday. I met with Will Eubank, the director, on the Saturday via Zoom, and I was in Australia on Monday, ready to rock and roll with my training. So we had like a week of training. I was the last to be cast amongst, you know, Russell Crowe, obviously, Milo Ventimiglia, Liam Hemsworth, Luke Hemsworth. So they'd already had like an extra week of weapons training. So I kind of came in for the last week of weapons training and with Luke Cale, who's Australian Special Forces. So it's more of a case of, it's something that I always tell, you know, young and aspiring actors, is just be ready, always be ready. You know, the acting's for free. What they're paying for is that prep, is that craft, that training that should already be in you. So I train constantly all the time, just in case for one of these moments. You know, I would love a Jake Gyllenhaal or Michael B. Jordan moment where I'm booked for a movie a year out and I have a year to train and look incredible, but you just never know what's going to happen. Okay. So I watch my diet. I train every day, not fully intensely, but just to maintain. I'm going to be a bit crude here, but my trainer always said I need to be one good dump away from the front cover of Men's Health.
That's wow. So,
I mean, it's a tagline right there. You need to be one good crap away from the front cover of Men's Health. So I try and maintain a level of fitness, but not that right. Kind of elite screen fitness. But so it put me in good stead for this movie because it really was a physically demanding movie. You know, the Australian heat, the up and down the mountains and the landscape of Australia, carrying all that extra weight with the weapons that I had, a sniper rifle on top of my assault rifle and sidearms and body armor and things. So it really was physical. And I think they cast really well in the form of Milo and the Hemsworths, because you needed to be a certain level of fitness to kind of get through it.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, you talk about being ready and always being ready as an actor. I mean, you are a little more than ready, because I think Sergeant Bishop, your character, probably looks the most physically fit of the entire squad. I mean, you certainly look the most built. So when you say you're ready, I mean, you're really ready.
Well, the good thing about, you know, playing in the military is they're not in the gym. You know, they don't need to be shredded and like this bodybuilder physique. It's, you've got to be functional. And that's kind of what I was at the time. Because I can't remember what I was training for, but I was very functional, which is what you needed to be for the role. And Bishop is, you know, he's been there, he's seen it all, he's done it all. He needed to be a certain physicality to also play that intimidating role. At the beginning of the movie, David Frigerio wrote a fantastic kind of entrance to the movie, which I think we lack a lot of in current action movies, where I grew up on Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone, Bruce Willis, all these action heroes who you cared about what happened to them. You know, you really were interested in their survival. And what we did in this movie is you set the tone. I will give you the first 15 minutes to learn about the characters, the dynamics between them, to understand what they've got at risk. You know, we learn about that they've got family, they've got wives and they've got daughters. Bishop has a wife and a daughter that we learn about. Milo's character talks about his wife and how his daughter loves Fruit Loops. So you automatically start to care about these dynamics, and that bodes well for later on when you care about their survival more. You're rooting for them. You know, it's like with John Wick, as soon as the puppy died, everybody was all in. Even the girls who were like, I don't want to watch an action movie. As soon as the puppy died, it's like, kill them all. Kill them all. So we set the scene, and Bishop really is kind of prodding and poking at Liam Hemsworth's character, at Kinney, the new rookie. But that's where kind of some of my homework does come in. Obviously, I didn't have much time, and the script is there. What you've kind of got to do for homework-wise is kind of set yourself a backstory. And what we kind of did with David Frigerio, the writer, Will Eubank, the director, is kind of just invent families, invent a need, invent a want. And my want was to always get home to my wife and child, is to get home to my daughter, to see her grow up, to walk her down the aisle, to see her graduate and things like that. So in the beginning, I'm very intent on pushing Kinney to see if he's ready. Because as I warn him later on in the movie, nobody wins at war. You know, this is not a fun place to be. No one's a hero. No one's the good guy, because death isn't a good thing. So it just takes one bad day to change your whole perspective. And unfortunately for Kinney, that day's today. I just want to get home to my wife and kid. And if you mess up, if you hesitate even a second, someone dies. And so it may seem as like a hazing or almost like a bullying, but poking the bear. But it's more just to make sure that he's ready for what he's about to encounter, because Bishop's been there, seen it all. So, he had to be this intimidating frame, which fortunately for me, I apparently possess.
And it must have been quite a nice moment as well. Well, I imagine it was David Fajiro. Or it might have been Will Eubank. Also, someone went, by the way, Bishop's the one who gets the tattoo of the movie's title on his arms.
They say, never say the name of the movie in the movie. So when they said, well, you're going to say the name of the movie in the movie, and you're going to have the name of the movie tattooed on your arms, and we want you, after a monologue, to bring your arms up into shot unnaturally and say the name of the movie that is tattooed on your arms in the movie. I had nightmares for about 2 weeks, because it was later on in the shoot. I think it was literally about 3 weeks into the shoot, and I was literally rolling around like sleepless nights going, how am I going to do this? How am I going to say this where it's not cheesy, it's not this, and it's not that? And I remember actually going through the rehearsal when we finally got to that. We were doing like, we had another couple of scenes before it that day. And when we came to that, we went through the rehearsal and the walkthrough, and I did it for the first time. And I went through this kind of whole monologue that I talked to Kinney about, you know, war is barbaric and that there's no winners in war. And I finish it up with, you know, welcome to the land of bad. And all I heard from like the tent was, wow. And like, I was like, oh, I did it. I nailed it. Finally. I was just so glad to get, that's probably the most nervous I was for a scene. You know, forget the explosions, the bullets, the stunts that we did, the dehydration levels that you went through, because we're all vain actors. And so like when we've got our shirts off, we're like not drinking water for 2 days because we want to look ripped like Hugh Jackman. Saying that of the title was the worst day of my set experience. Just trying to like, not just be like cheesy, just welcome to the land of bad.
I loved it. It gave me goosebumps. You pulled it off, man. And I think you're right. I think it could have gone either way, but no, it's a very cool moment. The forearms in shot like that.
Do you know the worst part is because of my body armor, I couldn't even just do it simple like this. It's like my boobs were too big. Like I had to get around the breastplate and all my weapons. And so I'm like, am I having to go, welcome to the land of bear.
It helped. It made it work. It made that scene sing.
I can't lie. Nightmares. Like literally sleepless nights. It wasn't the night before the scene, but the night before, the day before, I literally was like just thinking about it. Just how are you going to say that? Just looking in the mirror. Just like, do you know Robert De Niro? Just like in the mirror. Just like, welcome to the land of bear. Welcome to the land of bear. Welcome to the land of bad. Like, just...
God, I can't... Of all the things that happen in this movie, I really didn't think it would be saying welcome to the land of bad that was the toughest part of what looks like an insanely tough shoot.
An insanely physical shoot of immense physicality, up and down mountains, intense heat, intense humidity, all the weapons, the weight of all that, the explosions, like, within inches of your head. No. A line by David Frigerio gave me the sweats.
that dehydration technique, it's weird, really interesting. You mentioned Hugh Jackman. That's the first time I ever heard of it. He was talking about it for Logan, where he didn't drink water because it makes all your veins and your muscles pop. But apparently it's pretty dangerous.
You're basically dying. Right. It's stupid. Actors are so vain. They would rather sit on the brink of life to look good for a 3-second window on screen. But it's a science. Like, if anyone doesn't know at home, like, literally, there is a science to all models, actors, whenever they've got their shirts off. If you've got a topless shoot, if you're doing a movie or a TV show where you've got a scene and you're shirtless, there's an incredible science behind it where your body is literally dying, but it's never looked more shredded and awesome. So you drink, it's called water loading. So I drink kind of like a gallon of water a day, which is, you know, it's like 4 liters of water a day. And you load up to 5 to 6. You start about 10 days out from that scene, that day, the day of the scene or day of the shoot. And you get up to 10 liters a day. And what you're basically doing is you're flushing your body. You're kind of creating this cycle where your body needs to urinate every 5 minutes. You can't get through, you know, an episode of TV. You can't get through like almost a take without wanting to go to the toilet. It's insane, but you're peeing constantly. And what you do the day before is you cut that by half down to 5. And then once you get to 6 o'clock, 6 p.m., the night before the shoot, you stop drinking. What your body's still doing is it takes a while to register that you're not drinking 10 liters. So it's still trying to excrete 10 liters of water to be ready for the next day. So what you're now doing is expelling all the water from your body, which makes your muscles, your skin tight to the muscle. So what that does in conjunction with a lack of carbs and a lack of sugar that you've been having for this kind of same 10 day period is your body's kind of like depleting and it's struggling, but it's surviving on the water. Now, on the day of the shoot, literally about within an hour, 20 minutes of the shoot, you load up on carbs. You load up on sugar. Like, you just have a jam sandwich. Just have some bread, some jam, some dried fruit, whatever it is. Now your muscles swell because they've just had an injection of carbs and energy and all this kind of sugar. So now your skin is tighter to a muscle that has now expanded because it's just been given carbs for the first time in a long time. Your veins are pumping because you've had an insulin shot of sugar that you've been lacking for however many days. And you just look pumped, big, but shredded. But no, you're dying.
Wow. I mean, you're not kidding. I
shot the cover of Men's Health in the UK. And I did this, and I was very proud of it. It's one of those moments as a physical actor, you know, you're like, oh, I'm on the front cover of Men's Health, Men's Fitness. You know, that's what you always want. And I did this whole thing, and I was shooting, and I was halfway through the shoot, and they gave me like a cup of tea, because we were coming towards the end. And I'm holding this cup of tea, and because your body is literally struggling, it's devoid of all the nutrients and vitamins and water and everything that it needs. My hand cramped. And it was stuck around this hot cup and I couldn't move it. I had to get the crew to peel my fingers off this cup because I couldn't get it off. And I was scalding my hand because my hand just decided, this is me now. This is how we're going to stay for the rest of my life. And we had to peel my fingers off this cup to rip this cup out of my hand because my body was just like, I'm done. I'm out.
Oh,
and so we just had to load me up with water, load me up with some sugar, carbs, and just had to feed my body just so that it could kind of like start to recover. But you've got to do it slowly as well. That's another thing that people get wrong is you can't just go and gallop down a liter of water. You have to kind of sip it slowly because technically you can drown yourself. This is crazy.
All right. Well, this you had me until you could drown yourself during the recovery period, and I'm out. I'm just going to tell you, I'm out.
And models and actors genuinely do this all the time because we are so vain. We just want to look good for that moment because they say films for life, films forever.
I really wish I hadn't told you how good you looked in this movie because I feel I'm feeding this cycle now and it's just going to go on and on and I'm just going to be worried about you drowning after a shoot.
Oh, it's nuts. But the main thing for me is what a lot of people never do is I just want people to know this process and that you don't look like this all the time. You know, this we live in a world of social media and highlight reels where everyone looks great and we're doing these photo shoots and people just assume that that's achievable. It's not. It is for a moment, but that's not how I walk around every day. You know, I'm not that shredded, not that cut and muscular. You know, I am for moments when I'm filming or when I'm shooting and things like that. But that's just not sustainable for the day. So you just want to put it out there for the younger audience that, you know, just do what you can. You don't, you know, don't fall for these highlight reels on social media, on your Instagrams, where everyone's just jacked 100% of the time. So just know that there's a whole science behind it, and it's only for a moment. So just be you. Just stay healthy. That's all you need to do. Just stay fit. Walk around. Yeah. Do a jog. 10 sit-ups, 10 press-ups.
Or follow my Instagram, where no one looks jacked ever.
You do have great hair, though. So just follow you for hair goals.
I'll take that.
Amazing hair.
I'll take that. It involves dehydrating yourself. I'm always almost dying to have hair this good. Right, Ricky, we're going to talk more about Land of Bad as we go on this journey. But right now, it's time to leave this reality and enter a dimension of pure film where our virtual cinema awaits. You are our guide. We are your audience. Let's go on a trip to the movies. So, we push open the door to our temple of film and find ourselves in the foyer. There's an excited buzz, as there always is in a cinema foyer. The hum of anticipation. It's your perfect cinema trip, Ricky. Who have you picked, living or dead, to go with you?
This is where I sound like a real, loner and really sad, but I love going to the movies by myself. Is that bad?
No judgment.
Does that ruin the whole kind of show?
It absolutely does. Now, if you want to go on your own, you tell me why you love going to the cinema on your own.
The thing is, as a military kid myself, I was always traveling around the world, and you're making new friends and saying goodbye to old friends. As an actor, you find yourself with days off when maybe your other castmates don't. You're in different countries, you're in different areas where you're not at home, you're not amongst your friends or anyone you know. So you're trying to make use of your day. And so you go to the movies by yourself. And I've always been a huge film buff. I love movies. And I'm one of those people that like, you know, when your partner like asks you questions during a movie and you're like, I'm watching it at the same time as you. I don't know. Like, if you wait 5 seconds, they're probably going to tell you. Where are they going? I don't know. But if you watch, you're probably going to find out. Why are they going there? I don't know. But if you write me a list, I will answer this at the end of the movie if they haven't told you. I'm that guy where I'm just like, no questions. You can have your questions at the end of the movie, but don't speak to me during it. So I just love to kind of, no questions asked, just be completely engrossed in the movie. I love to escape, you know, whatever movie, whether it be a comedy, a romantic comedy, a drama, an action. I just love that escape and not having to confirm if the person to my side is enjoying it as much as I am. You know, you're worried about like, did they enjoy it as much as I did, or, you know, kind of that sort of thing. So I just love being 100% invested in what I'm watching and having my own opinions and having my own kind of thoughts about it. So I just really love going to the movies by myself and having that escape.
Ricky, I'm happy with that answer. You can go to our virtual cinema on your own, okay? You're on your own. Now, there is a clock on the wall in the foyer. It reads a specific time. What time of day have we gone to the cinema?
I think I sound like a real, like, hermit. During the day. During the day, I think about 1 o'clock, I go to my local, in Woodland Hills here, I go to AMC. It's one of those dine-in theaters. So I love going during a mealtime, so a lunch or a dinner. But I love the fact that the movies are quiet during the day. You can kind of go in. It's really relaxing. You can pick where you want to sit. And I love to just like have a big cheat meal when I go to the movies. You don't go to the movies and you know, sit there with a salad. You go there with junk food. You have like, you know, I'll have a cheeseburger, a dirty gourmet cheeseburger, fries. I'll have my chocolates and candies and things like that, my sweets. So it's going to have to be like around, I base it around a mealtime so that I can really kind of pig out. I also get it done before the movie starts. Like, that stuff's gone during the trailers because, again, I want to focus on the movie. I don't want to hear myself crunching through the opening credits. So That stuff is smashed before that movie starts.
Wow. Okay. All right, then. That's absolutely fine. Let me ask you this, Joe. You must have watched Land of Bad for the first time with an audience. Talk me through your first experience of seeing Land of Bad. Were you nervous? Did you get nervous? What was it like?
I've seen it I've seen it four times in the theaters through various screenings that we had. We had a screening with the military, which was incredible. I'll move on to that. But after my first screening was with distributors, finances, people who made the movie, people that were going to distribute the movie around the world globally. And I was sat at the back next to some of these distributors. So people who had not seen the rushes, had not read this, maybe not read the script or anything. They were just there to kind of take it in. And then the bidding starts and they send it around the world. It was awesome, because this woman to my side did not stop flinching, moving, breathing heavy, talking like kind of, oh my goodness. Like, she had exactly what I would describe this movie as the epic thriller roller coaster that just leaves you on the edge of the seat. Like, I make this joke, you might pay for the whole seat, but you're only going to need the edge. This woman was leaning forward at moments, kind of going like, okay. It was so good to watch her go through that, like the emotional roller coaster that this movie takes you on. I think if I had to go to a movies with someone, it would be someone like that. Someone that like feels every moment of it, where they're just like, wow, like you're in this movie. So that was a really great experience, because when you shoot a movie, you know, it's not like the theater. You get an instant reaction. You know, if you make a joke, someone laughs. If you're on stage, someone laughs. If you do something sad, people cry. You know, there's that instant kind of moments of reaction. You have to wait for critics. You have to wait for social media to respond, or you ask people, friends, colleagues, workmates that have seen it. So to see someone's reaction there live for the first time, and also it was also my first time. So I was really excited, because we never saw it before then. So I was enjoying it myself. And David Frugiero wrote a great script. It's one of the reasons I took the movie. Will Eubank is the next best action director out there. And that's another reason why I took the movie. I shot the movie. I saw how much fun we had and how good the movie was at the time, what we were doing. And it still blew my mind how good it looked on screen. It really is one of, like, don't watch this on your mobile phone, on your iPad. You need to find the biggest screen possible to get the whole kind of sound experience. You need to like crank up the volume and hear the incredible score, the incredible sound effects that really kind of leave your heart pounding through this movie, because it really is an intense roller coaster. And so I really enjoyed the first time I watched it. I forgot, you know, how much we shot. You know, I even forgot, most actors watch a movie and we're like, oh, they cut my line. Oh, they used that take. Why'd they use that take? What's going on? I forgot about that, because I was actually so invested in it, and then distracted by this woman who was just literally losing her mind, like worried about all the kind of soldiers that were dying and things. So that was really awesome. And then to then go to a military base, we went to a military base up here in LA and showed it for the troops, for the Air Force. And that was a different experience, because we know an action audience is going to love this movie, because it's from after that first 15 minutes of setting the scene, creating the dynamics, the brotherhood, it's nonstop action and it's crazy intense. So I know an action audience is going to love this. And I know people who just love a drama are going to love this, because of the kind of feel that you kind of get for these characters. But when the military, who do this for a living, day in, day out, for real, they actually put their lives on the line. They're not like counting down for an explosion that's safely away, or a stunt double comes in. You know, they're putting their lives on the line every day, making immense sacrifices for all of us. When they come and watch this movie and you hear them applaud moments, and like, I mean, screws my language, but I heard at one point someone saying, F yeah! Like, but with the whole word. That's a great feeling. You know, and when they get the jokes, because there's a lot of in-jokes with the military that they would understand, because David Frugiero kind of spoke to a lot of troops, the next military. We had, like I say, Australian Special Forces on set, but we also had some coordinators that were ex-JTAC. Jason Kinney was a JTAC who plays like Liam Hemsworth's character. this guy was that role in the special forces in the US. And so he used a lot of dialogue and situations that the military really responded to in that viewing. And that was really interesting, you know, things like, you know, you can't trust the word the Air Force say, you know, that doesn't get a laugh necessarily in a public audience, but that killed it in that military showing because they understood that, you know, the Air Force was full of crap. And you've got these kind of hierarchies between Navy, Air Force, Army, and then the special forces, the Delta teams, who kind of feel they're above everybody and things like that. So it was really interesting kind of getting their kind of feedback afterwards that they actually loved it because you're like, we're portraying you and we want to do it as authentically as possible. That's why we trained so much before we shot in that week and the 2 weeks for the other cast members before I got there, so that you stood as they would, as you moved as you would, as you thought and kind of just even at ease, you wanted to kind of portray the truth in what they do. And they loved it. And literally, I remember speaking to one soldier who was literally who said he was with his wife, and his wife said he hates military films. He's always got something to say. That was bad. That would never happen. That was horrible. They weren't trained. That's just stupid. I didn't want to watch it. He walks out of movies. All sorts of stuff. She said he only has one thing, and that when he said it, it was literally the only thing he had with our movie was.
Wait, Can I guess?
Go for it.
Was it, welcome to the land of bad?
He was even okay with that. It was that there was the base that we kind of infiltrate. There's a setup, a big kind of tent that's in the middle of an area. And his only problem was that should have been moved to the back wall because you allow a 360 degree kind of, it just means you've got more to cover if you're defending it. And I was like, but it's just a tent. The actual base is the building. That's just a chill area. And he was like, okay, I'll give you that. So I was like, the military love it. The audience love it. So yeah, I'm absolutely buzzing. And the feedback's been great. You know, we're not out there trying to win, you know, Oscars and awards. It's about entertainment. It's like that escape, like I said, you know. If you want a great action movie, and I've seen a lot recently that they're okay, and you watch them once, and I couldn't tell you what happened. I've forgotten about them already. I've watched this four times, and I would watch it again even if I wasn't in it. It really is I'm genuinely proud of this one, and it's a great action movie.
It is, and I'm sending you at your desired time to the cinema at 8 in the morning. How's that? Is that too early? Do you want 10, 11? What time do you want in the morning?
I said like during the day.
Oh, so okay. What time?
Because I train in the morning. So if you can give me a 1 o'clock showing.
1 o'clock. All right. You are going to the cinema. 1 p.m. on your own. Right. You've already told me what you're ordering from the many snack stands that we have in our virtual foyer. Just to check.
Which country, though?
Oh, okay. Well, it's your trip. Where do you want to go? What serves the best food? Be careful with this, Ricky.
Well, the thing is, obviously I'm in America, so I've got to choose my local. And so I will go cheeseburger, fries. I'll have some. Unfortunately, we don't have what I really want at the cinema, which is Maltesers and minstrels. That's my jam. Minstrels are not out here.
You've got that freaky American chocolate.
You've got to have M&Ms, but it's not the same chocolate. It's not even the same M&Ms that we have in England. They taste different.
They do.
I have to have this fake chocolate stuff that's just probably full of cocaine to make Americans addicted. I don't know. It's just not the same. So if I'm going to go to the local theater here, it's going to unfortunately be M&Ms and Sour Patch Kids as well.
And a cheeseburger and fries. Anything to drink?
To drink, I like to be healthy. You know, I like to just have a water. So it's one of those people that like, you know, can I have a cheeseburger, fries, and a Diet Coke? Because I'm watching my figure.
All right, we have everything we need from the foyer. Let's push open the doors into the corridor down towards the auditorium. Now it's looking pretty bare at the moment, so I'm going to put up posters that depict some of your most important movie memories. And the first poster I'm putting up depicts, Ricky, your fondest movie memory.
Fondest movie memory? Not actually in the theater, but it's why I'm so obsessed with movies and the Air Force, and the fact that I'm so proud of this movie to be in my first proper action movie. As a kid, my dad was in the military. We moved around every 3 years, different countries, different air bases around the world. And we were posted to Hong Kong when I was 7 years old, turning eight. No, I was eight, turning nine. I think I was eight, turning nine, something like that. I was young. And in the Air Force, you have what we call street parties where you're on a base. So it's all Air Force. It's all Navy and Army. And, you know, they have these kind of street parties where the whole street comes out. They all drink and they have a great time. The kids are all playing until it gets dark. And then the kids get sent to someone's house. And they threw us all into this house and threw Top Gun on. And I literally was mesmerized. I sat there while kids were running around going crazy. I did not take my eyes off this screen for the whole movie. When it finished, I ran back downstairs to the street, found my dad and said, "Can I watch it again?" And so he had to come upstairs, rewind it, because I'm old as hell and you had to rewind videotapes back then. And that took a few minutes. Kids will never understand patience. Do you know the patience it took to stop it, rewind, and to wait there for, you know, and if it's at night and you're trying to do it on the quiet and it's loud, they'll never understand that the fear you have when you're watching something you're not supposed to and you're rewinding and it's like,
yeah. Yeah. They'll never know the two most upsetting words in conjunction with watching a movie: auto tracking. Let's try and get rid of that fuzz. Auto tracking. Why has the screen got lines on it?
I forgot about that. Oh my God, auto tracking was awful. You can't even just watch a movie. You have to stay with it. You have to kind of guide your movie through. You're like, come on, we can do this. We got this. But yeah, that movie literally set me up because I was a military kid and I literally was on an airbase surrounded by helicopters and jets and military. To watch Top Gun and that literally inspired me as a kid to want to be a pilot and to follow my dad into the Air Force. Obviously, that went well because I haven't done it. But it was more because of eyesight, because back then you had to have 20/20 vision to fly jets and things like that. So that's why I didn't go into that. But from that moment on, I wanted to be Maverick. I wanted to be in the Air Force. And I wanted to fly jets against Russia and all the enemies. And it blew my mind. And if you had to win a quiz today, what is Ricky Whittle's favorite movie of all time? Top Gun. That is, if you want to win a competition, you know, because people go, oh, I don't know. It could be this. It could be that. Top Gun would be my movie. And Maverick, the sequel, perfect movie. It gave me everything I needed having watched and grown up through the first movie. You know, things weren't in there. You know, Penny Benjamin wasn't just a random girl. She was mentioned in the movie by Meg Ryan, you know. Everything was just like linked to the first movie. It was chef's kiss.
Okay, the next poster we're putting up as we continue down the corridor is for your worst movie memory.
There's a moment that I don't remember because I was too young, but my mum tells me traumatized her is watching E.T. in the theater. As a child, I watched E.T. in the theater, and for some reason, as a child, I wasn't convinced that he went home. I wasn't convinced that his mom was happy with him and that he was in trouble and he was still lost. So when the movie ended, the credits are rolling, I'm a child crying his eyes out, hiding under the seats. My mom couldn't get under the seats. She couldn't find me. I was moving away. Apparently the next showing had to delay for like 20 minutes because this child would not stop screaming underneath the seats because E.T. didn't go home. And so...
Explain that. Explain the logic to me. So you thought E.T. had faked going home and was still what? Trapped on Earth?
Well, he goes up into the ship.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I didn't see the mum welcome him. And so like when he stood there by himself, I'm like, where's mum? Like he wants to go home, but like where's his family? I don't, like, because I think at the beginning there's more of them. And so I just, for some reason, 2 + 2 = 7. And I'm like, well, he's still not home yet. Like, maybe that's Spielberg. Maybe you need to explain a bit more. Maybe we need an alternate ending, Stephen. Stephen, how about you make it a bit more obvious for our simple kids that don't get it?
All right, then. Let's put up the next poster. So I'm putting up a poster for E.T. The next poster I'm putting up depicts the last performance, Ricky, that brought you to tears.
The thing that does bring me to tears is usually animals and children. So
yeah, that'll do it.
Like, I'll see a sad movie and it's a romance movie and they've been lovers their whole life, and like The Notebook, and you know, one partner's dying and it's so sad, they spend their whole lives. And I'm like, that's sad. Oh, that's a shame. But you have a dog on screen for 3 seconds and it gets like clipped or like falls over. I'm like, oh my God, is he gonna be okay? No, I need to know. No dogs were harmed in the making of this movie. I need to know this. That makes me really sad. So, what's that Rose Byrne and Mark Wahlberg movie where they adopt a kid?
Oh my God, not, is that The Family Plan? No,
The Family Plan. I think that one. I can't think of one post that, but I'm sure there was. But when the kids were like really kind of feeling neglected and alone and stuff, that was a surprise one, because I'm like, it's Rose Byrne, it's Mark Wahlberg. A Mark Wahlberg movie is not going to make me cry. Like, he's not that guy. Rose Byrne's a great actress, but I came for a comedy. I came for laughs. And that surprisingly got me, where I welled up and I was like, this got me. That got me.
I was quite surprised with that movie as well, because I was expecting a knockabout comedy, and it does. It's got some real heart in there.
There's some heart in there. And like I said, it's because it's kids. And I just think animals and kids are just so pure of heart, and you just want what's best for them. Even the purest adults, you're like, you probably did something bad. There's probably some karma in there.
Right. All right, lovely. I think it's The Family Plan. If it's not, well, then we're putting up a poster for a movie called The Family Plan.
I think that's great knowledge. I think you're right.
There was another Mark Wahlberg recently with Michelle Monaghan, which I also think might have been called The Family Plan. So I'm 50-50. Right, the final poster, though, Ricky, depicts your unpopular movie opinion.
I've got lots of opinions. Unpopular. Like, rom-com has not been the same since Julia Roberts and Sandra Bullock retired from that genre.
Wow, that's a big one. We can't just let that go.
That's not even my biggest one, but like, I'm bored of watching weird, awkward, emo children talk about love. And I'm like, you're 12. You don't know about love. Relax, it's your first. There will be 17 more. Don't worry, you're going to get married and divorced twice. Why are you talking to me about love? You know, I miss those Matthew McConaughey and Kate Hudson, you know, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. This is where I lose my manly points, because like, I'm supposed to be big, rugged and manly. And I'm like, I love a rom-com. So bring back Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds in Proposal. These are the goats of rom-com. And like, when you have like My Best Friend's Wedding, Julia Roberts, right? She's the bad guy in the movie. She's literally trying to break up her best friend's wedding for herself, so she can have him for herself, and you still root for her. No actress in today's theater can do that. You're still going, oh, Julia, I hope you get him. No, that doesn't happen. That's how good Julia Roberts was. She's the bad person in the movie, and you still root for her. That does not happen in rom-coms now. Now you're just like, if you get together, you get together. If you don't, I don't really care.
Considering you took a big pause at the start when I said, what's your unpopular movie opinion? That's a great one. That since Sandra Bullock, Julia Roberts and Kate Hudson retired from rom-coms, there hasn't been a good one. I'm putting up a poster for My Best Friend's Wedding, because that's a great film.
It's a classic. When you're not rooting for Cameron Diaz, who is one of the cinema's darlings, like, she is also a goat. That's how good Julia Roberts is in that movie. Unreal.
Right. We're leaving the corridor. We're walking into the auditorium. Now, there's a crowd of people who want to come in and join you in the cinema, but you've already said you like a cinema experience on your own. Do you want to let them in? You don't, do you? I can see.
I will, because there are moments when you want people in the movies, like comedy. You want to hear that kind of the auditorium. You want to hear everyone kind of laugh at the same point, which is why I genuinely believe that more comedies do need Oscars, because I think it's much harder to make a room full of people laugh at the same time than to cry. You just put a sad situation with sad music, you can make the majority of those people cry. It's an easy sit. It's an easy sell. Put an animal or a child on there in peril, I'm gonna cry my eyes out. I don't even have to spend 5 seconds before I'm in a puddle of tears. But to make a group of people laugh at something simultaneously is a gift. And I think comedy needs more kind of props for that. So yeah, I do need a group of people for a comedy.
Okay. Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. I don't want you to tell me the movie you're going to be playing for us until we've played a few other moments on the big screen, starting with the trailer for the movie you are most looking forward to seeing at the cinema.
Land of Bad 2? Too bad?
You're going to have to get, it's going to be right down your arms, all right, onto the underside, everywhere.
Well, my character's all tattooed up, so the tattoos are going to have to start coming into his face, like kind of like, you know, Post Malone or something. But all of the tattoos that Bishop has are actually Easter eggs. And they're little like odes to what happens in the movie.
Wait, so if I pause that, it tells the story of the movie in his tattoos.
There's stuff that I won't say because obviously it says what's happening. But like things like there's a bulldog on his arm. That's actually the director's bulldog. That's his pet dog. I've got a crucifix on my back, and it's got lots of names, which is kind of like his fallen comrades. It's actually my makeup and hair team and my name. So, I mean, it's covered in blood and dirt, but like if you could see it properly paused, it's actually the name of my makeup team, hair team, the crew that were all kind of inspirational in creating Bishop. So that's the actual names that are in the crucifix on Bishop's back. So
that's nice.
It was a nice touch. But yeah. So trailer.
No, I like it. I like Land of Bad 2. Too bad. Let's do it.
Too bad.
Let's aim for the stars. Let's aim for the stars. Yeah. Great. Done. Sold. Right then, let's next play the movie moment that makes you metaphorically or literally pump your fist in the air.
If I'm going to go recent, it'll be Maverick. It's literally Maverick when he does his Maverick thing. So all else failed. None of the rookies can complete the course in the allotted time. So they're all going to die, and the movie, the mission's going to be a failure. And then Maverick, who's already been kind of fired and told that it's over and he's off, he's going to have to retire, appears as a blip on the screen, and he's going to run the gauntlet. And he runs the gauntlet, not only nails it. I'm getting chills just, I might have to watch it today. I think when I finish this, I might have to put it on. I'm not even going to lie. I definitely might. It's one of the few films I actually bought. You know when you can buy a movie on streaming? I'm that tight guy that's like, oh, I'm not paying $20. I'll wait till it gets down to $4.99 or $2.99. I'm like, okay, now you're worth it. Now you're worth it. I happily paid $20 for Land of Bad and Maverick. They're the last two movies I bought.
I love that moment. I think you've picked a cracking moment there. I'm going to play that on the big screen.
It's so good. And you know it's coming, but the way it was shot and the way he does it, it's just so amazing. Like, I generally do, like, get chills at that. Like I'm generally like, you never want movies to be rebooted and remade and sequels because they get ruined. Like, Anchorman is one of the funniest comedies of all time. Anchorman 2 just destroyed it for me. I was so disappointed. You know, there's so many movies like that. But then when Maverick was coming out, you were like, oh, just do it right. Just don't ruin this for me. And he absolutely nailed it. And that moment for me, again, chef's kiss.
Well, that moment plays out on the big screen. Now, though, we're going to play what you consider cinema's most shocking moment. Is there a moment in cinema that you consider shocking? either visually or even ethereally, a concept that shocks you about cinema?
There's so much, but one of the best, and I still think it's underrated, even though it's one of the most highly rated movies of all time. Like, as I think about it now, what's in the box? Everybody knows that quote.
Yeah.
What's in the box? When you find out what's... I'm one of those people that, like, my mum figures out a movie in the opening credits. She's like, any kind of thriller or mystery or blah, 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 you know, Poirot or whatever, she's figured out who's the killer, what's happening in the first, you know. I'm the guy that's like, right till the end, I'm like, and then, and then, and then. That blew my mind. I was like, no, oh my God, oh my God. And so for like the, throughout the rest of the end of that movie, I'm just like, do it. Do it. Like, no, don't do it. Like, it's one of the greatest moments in movie history. And for Brad Pitt to not get an Oscar for that, he's so good throughout that movie. Like, I generally think if Brad Pitt wasn't so attractive, he would have had 3 Oscars by now. More, maybe. Like, I think it held him back because he's just so pretty. You're just going like, he's just so pretty, isn't he? Like, we can't give him everything. He can't be talented as well. But he is. He genuinely is. And that moment is just, his reaction is brutal. It's heart-wrenching. And it leaves the audience in a moral dilemma where you're just like, do you shoot him or do you let him live and let him suffer for the rest of his life? You know, you've got him. Like, take him to jail for the rest of his life. Let him suffer. Or do you get your vengeance there and then? Like, it's a brutal moment. And for me, that's one of the most shocking moments for me.
Right, we're playing What's in the Box from Seven.
What's in the Box? And like I say, name me a bet. Like, that quote, people instantly know what you're talking about. That's a great movie. When you've got like a quote that you literally instantly takes you to a moment, you're winning.
Right. How about this then? The next thing we're going to play through the Dolby Atmos speakers is the line or piece of dialogue from a movie, Ricky, that most affects you.
There's moments in movies that you love and they're exciting, that you always remember, you know, things that move you emotionally or spiritually, or they just fit in that moment. But I'm gonna go with one of my favorite actors, and he still is, and I'd love to work with him. Like, the fact that I've worked with so many great actors so far, if you're gonna say, you know, who's on my list of top 5 actors ever to work with, it would be Sylvester Stallone. He created a franchise that literally inspired the world to push harder to believe in yourself and in Rocky. In the Rocky franchise, which they've tried to move Creed in that way, and it just doesn't hit the same. Especially when you take Sylvester Stallone out, I'm sorry, but your movie franchise is dead. He's the heart. He's the reason that movie works. Him and Adrian, anyway, because Rocky doesn't win without Adrian. But that beautiful speech in Rocky, so it's not Rocky 4, I think it's about Rocky 5. There's a few where he talks about, it's not how hard you can hit, but how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. That's something that it resonated with me because, you know, like I spoke to earlier, like, don't believe my highlight reel. I've got a great Instagram that's going to show you that I'm traveling the world. I just came back from Paris and hosting the top international model world final in Monte Carlo. Like, and I'm staying in a hotel that I wouldn't even pay for because it's way too expensive for me to spend that stupid money on. I'm surrounded by incredible celebrities. I presented with Adriana Carambo, a supermodel. You know, I live in Los Angeles in a beautiful home. Like, I work on these great things. Like, don't believe my highlight reel. I've got problems like everybody else. You know, I struggle at times and I'm sad at times. You know, we've all got problems. And when you can like turn to a quote like that, that everyone's getting hit, don't worry about it. You know, yeah, you're getting hit and it feels like it's too much and it's the end, or you can't cope. You can, because you've got this far and you've been hit before and you thought you couldn't cope then, but you're still here. You got up and you kept moving forward. And so for me, that line by Sylvester Stallone, by Rocky Balboa, it's not how hard you can hit, but how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, I think is one of the most powerful quotes that can relate to anyone in any industry, in any country, in any scenario, at any age. And it's something that I would tell to everyone. We all get hit, but you've got to just keep moving forward, because that's the only way we can progress, man. Just don't give up. Winners are just losers that kept getting up.
That is the quotes we are playing, and we finally arrived. Ricky, it is time now to announce the movie you have decided, out of all others, to screen for us in your virtual cinema tonight. Ricky, what are we watching?
So I've thought about this. And it's completely left field, because all I've done is talk about my best friend's wedding, Maverick, like Land of Bad, like all these movies. I'm going for the perfect movie because it still bangs. And I watched it about a month or so ago. No, it was less than a month ago. No, it was just before I went to Paris. Jurassic Park, the original.
That's a hell of a choice. Why?
I watched that in a movie theater and it blew my mind. And you think, yeah, it's robot dinosaurs, the CGI. I mean, that's like 30 years old now or something stupid crazy. Like, if you can believe like that's that old, when you go back, you're like, the dinosaurs are going to look fake and stupid. They don't. It still looks as good as anything you're making today. In fact, I've seen a lot of CGI today that looks much worse. That movie is a perfect movie, and every character is flawless. Every moment is fantastic. It takes you on a cheeky little roller coaster. It's so good. It's so good. And it's one of those novels that made into movies that wasn't ruined. It's so hard to kind of capture the imagination of an author, because everyone reads a book differently. I learned that with American Gods. Everyone had a different shadow moon in their head, Mr. Wednesday, a different scenario, how scenes in the book would play out on screen. And you can't please everyone, because everyone's got an individual, unique imagination. I think Jurassic Park nailed everybody's nostalgia, everybody's expectations. And I can still watch that today, no matter where you start it. If you start at the beginning, I'll watch the whole movie. If you start in the middle, I'll watch it to the end. If you watch the end, you'll just enjoy like the last moment where the T-Rex comes in and takes out the raptors. Like, it's a perfect movie. It's a perfect movie. The characters are great.
Have you heard the theory that the kid who Sam Neill scares with the velociraptor claw at the start, because he goes, they're just 6 foot turkeys. Have you heard that the theory is that he grows up to become Chris Pratt's character in the Jurassic World films? What's your take on that?
Chills, except he's way too young. Like, he needs to be older, or Chris Pratt needs to be younger.
I think, actually, weirdly, I think the timeline works out. But the big really? Thing that everyone the big thing that everyone talks about is the fact that Sam Neill says, Alan Grant says, show a little respect. And when Chris Pratt talks about his relationship with raptors, he goes, I respect them. You're not convinced, I can tell. It's fine. It's not my theory.
No, this is where I'm at. Like, I love a conspiracy theory. So my afternoon is now ruined. I had so many chores and errands I had to get done. But I'm going to go and watch Maverick, and I'm now going to go and watch Jurassic Park. And that is amazing. I love that stuff.
Okay, good.
I love it. If it was planned, like just subconsciously, like Bishop's tattoos and stuff, I love that stuff. And I will happily, even if it's not true, if it works out timeline-wise, I'm in 100%. Because I'd rather believe that than not.
Ricky, we're almost out of time, but we do have our mystery question, which you'll love. It's a feature called What's in the Box? And I do have a box.
What's in the box?
I saw you with the box. What was in the box?
Oh, what's in the box?
So this comes in from one of our dear listeners, and it's the following question. Hello, Ricky. What would be your dream role to play if it could be anything from real life people to literary characters to comic book heroes? Who would you most like to bring to life on screen?
Oh, there's too many. Stop it. A romantic comedy triangle with Julia Roberts and Sandra Bullock. Or, you know, I recently just posted about Jon Stewart, Green Lantern, because like I get fan cast by that all the time. You know, that'd be great in the news. But I would have to say, everyone always wants to be, and I know it's a big deal right now, the new James Bond. Even I would love to be James Bond, 007. But more interestingly, and for me, and Barbara Broccoli, if you're listening, I'm in 100%. Bond villains are always old, unfit, something's deformed, something's wrong with them. How about a young Bond villain who is an equal to James Bond, who is young, who is athletic, who is attractive, can rival him for the ladies of the movie, who can rival him in a fist fight, hand-to-hand combat, you know? How about we have, you know, an ex-agent, an ex-00 who is the guy, you know? He's a friend of James. He knows how James thinks. He knows how, you know, MI5 works. He knows how, like, all of them work, you know? It's for me, that could be a couple of movies. That's not just a movie. That's like a, you're not going to win this first movie. The bad guy's going to win. How about the bad guy wins? And because he knows how you think, he's young, he's fast, he's strong, he's an equal. Because then when James Bond eventually wins, it's more of a victory. So I'm going to go James Bond villain.
Ricky, that is us done. The curtains have closed. The guests are milling out, smiling, chatting, and thanking you for taking them on a wonderful trip to the movies. Your taxi awaits to ferry you back to reality.
But before you go, Ricky Whittle, let's recap your perfect trip to the movies. You are going on your own, and you're going in the day. You are having a cheeseburger, fries, M&Ms, and a water to drink. We're putting up a poster in the corridor for your fondest movie memory, which was the first time you saw Top Gun. Your worst movie memory was at the end of E.T. not being convinced E.T. actually goes home. The next poster is the last performance that brought you to tears. It's animals and children, really. Anything bad happening to them? In the end, we went with It's Not the Family Plan, It's Instant Family, the Mark Wahlberg Rose Byrne comedy. And the final poster depicts your unpopular movie opinion, which is there has not been a good romantic comedy since Sandra Bullock, Julia Roberts, and Kate Hudson stopped making them. We enter the auditorium. You are playing a trailer for Land of Bad 2, Too Bad, as the movie you're most looking forward to seeing at the cinema. The movie moment that makes you literally or metaphorically pump your fist in the air was Tom Cruise as Pete Maverick Mitchell doing the run in Maverick. Cinema's most shocking moment is What's in the Box from 7. The line or piece of dialogue that most affected you is from Rocky 5, and it is, it ain't about how hard you can hit, it's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. And finally, Ricky, you are screening for us the OG Jurassic Park from 1993. Ricky, that was your perfect trip to the movies. All that leaves me to say is, Ricky, have you had a good time?
The best.
It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. Congratulations on Land of Bad. It's a hell of a movie. Well done, mate.
No, I really appreciate it. Thanks for your time, man. It's great to see you. You did so many great things for American Gods, and I appreciate your time here with Land of Bad. It really is, I would say, like, I love American Gods because I was the lead, and it was an epic franchise that went around the world globally. And we're going to finish that, by the way. I'm definitely talking with Neil Gaiman, so that's
really
gonna, that's going to continue. Yeah, I've been talking to Neil Gaiman recently. About taking the final steps to finishing off that, and possibly even doing his short stories, Monica Glenn and Black Dog, which are shadow stories in Norway and Scotland. So Shadow's not finished yet. You hit it here first. But I gotta say, Land of Bad is the project that I'm so proud of to, like, tell people about. Like, go and watch this, because I just think American Gods really is a niche audience. You've got to be into that sci-fi, into that fantasy. You've got to be patient because it's a slow build. Whereas this is just a pure entertaining. Everyone can go in and watch this and just let go and just walk out mind blown. Absolutely mind blown. It's an epic thriller that, like I said, even if I wasn't in it, it'd be one of my favorite movies of the past few years.
Well,
I absolutely agree with you. And thank you for your time, Ricky. Goodbye for now.
It's a bit emotional. It's not been enough. Not been enough. We'll see you for too bad.
And as Ricky's cab carries him out of this dimension, away from our virtual cinema, back to reality, we must all leave his movie paradise as well. But before I say my final farewell for this episode, don't forget you can find the full video for today's Ricky Whittle interview, and indeed for every guest, over on our Trip to the Movies YouTube channel. So please head over there. And as I said at the start, please help us grow the podcast by hitting subscribe. Thank you very much. And that really is it. I'll be back next week when another guest fills our cinema with their celluloid dreams as they take us on a trip to the movies. Bye-bye.